Thanks for listening to the Best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
It's Outkick the Coverage here on Fox Sports Radio. Jonas Knox, Jeff Schwartz in for Clay Travis here on FSR. Jeff Schwartz in a heated contract dispute during the break finally was able to come to terms and at least can join us here on FSR. We appreciate your you being able to be here, Jeff. Thanks so much.
I'm glad to be here. Hopefully I didn't miss the opportunity to mock the Dodgers. Did opportunity pass already? Did we not mock them enough?
I saved it for you. I didn't want to eat before you. Yeah, I didn't want to eat before you.
I appreciate it.
And I wanted to wait till you got to the table. So we will have plenty of time to point that out here throughout the course of the show. Are going to catch up with our guy Frank Isola. You hear him on here with Clay all the time here on Fox Sports Radio from Sirius XM. Frank, thanks so much for the time. Jonas and Jeff, we appreciate you hanging out with us.
What's up, guys? How you doing?
We're good. I wanted to ask you, because I figured you would know this better than anybody, and I've always said that the worst thing when you're covering a team or a local teams, the worst thing that you could possibly be is 500, because it's just there's nothing really to sink your teeth into. You either want to be really good or really bad. So that being said, man, New York's got a lot of bad teams, right? So have you ever seen it like this where top to bottom, it appears that everybody is struggling and can't seem to find out what direction they're going to go in? They're just all stuck in a rut right now. It's got to be the topic of conversation on radio and in print out there constantly.
Yeah, you know, when you're mediocre, especially in the NBA, it's kind of hard to move anywhere. If you're mediocre in football, I mean, you could still be a playoff team and maybe you catch a couple of breaks, but the Jets and the Giants, not only are they not mediocre, they're both terrible, but here, this is what I actually think, this is worse than being mediocre. They're both boring. I mean, the Jets don't really have much going on, neither do the Giants, and I get it. We're focused on their two young quarterbacks, but look at the way that a lot of the young quarterbacks around the league are playing, whether they're in their first year or their second year. And Daniel Jones and Sam Darnold really haven't been getting it done. And now it already seems like a lot of people are focusing their attention on Trevor Lawrence of Clemson, you know, because one of those teams could be in position, could end up with the worst record. The Jets, obviously, right now have the inside track on that. But you're right about New York sports. And even the Yankees, right? The Yankees are a good team. And somehow they lost to hey, I give Tampa a lot of credit. They beat both the Yankees and Houston. You watch them play at times. They can never get a hit. Last night they finally did. The Yankees are New York's one saving grace, and they even came up short.
Let's talk about Sam Darnold. There's a lot of discussion around his talent, right? Is he being held back by Adam Gase? Is he being held back by a lack of weapons or a lack of offensive line? The mono last year obviously derailed his season in 2019. Is he a guy that a new coach can build around? I personally think they'll draft Trevor Lawrence, but what's your verdict on Sam Darnold? Because a lot of people still like the potential, but we don't really see quarterbacks that struggle this much early on become great later.
I tend to agree with you. I mean, just look at the way Justin Herbert has played starting just a few games ago for the Chargers. Look at what Mahomes did his first year. Now he got to sit behind Alex Smith for 1 year. You know, a lot of people do believe that with, you know, football players, NBA players, you kind of come into the league great, and you certainly haven't seen it from Sam Darnold and Daniel Jones. And I think, too, you know, a big part of it is turnovers. And you know, if you can't protect the ball, and it's just so hard to win, and he's had some injury issues. And I think with a lot of these general managers and coaches now, too, listen, if the Jets have the worst record in the league, Adam Gase isn't going to be here anyway. And the next thing you know, you bring in a new regime. And when you bring in a new regime, you know, they're not kind of tied to anybody. I mean, we saw this happen in Arizona with Josh Rosen. What was he? He got 1 year with Arizona, and they changed quarterbacks. So, Darnold is going to have to prove a lot over these next few weeks, because if the Jets are in position, like you just mentioned, if they're in position to take Trevor Lawrence, they're going to end up taking him.
Frank Isola joining us here on Fox Sports Radio. Jonas Knox, Jeff Schwartz in for Clay Travis here on Outkick the Coverage. I was thinking about this. So Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold are in the same draft. I would argue that Baker Mayfield's had a better NFL career than Sam Darnold and also gets about 10 times more criticism nationally than Sam Darnold does. Is this just a product of Baker Mayfield being a little bit of a loudmouth and Sam Darnold doesn't make headlines, doesn't ruffle feathers, and is more about football and not trying to cause any issues in the locker room?
I think that definitely has a lot to do with it. And I also think the personality of Baker Mayfield, when he does get the criticism, whether it's him responding to it or his wife, fiance, or his girlfriend, I don't know who it was who fired back at a bunch of people on social media. I think that is something to do. And also, I think the Browns are more of a national team than the Jets are, certainly over the last few years. The Browns, for a team that isn't any good, or hadn't been any good, you know, there has been something pretty fascinating about them, whether it's Odell Beckham, Myles Garrett, and of course, the quarterback, Baker Mayfield. He just seems to be a guy that's always at the center of something. The minute things turn badly for him, what did he say the other day? 4-2 feels like we're 0-6 because they have one bad loss. And I think it just shows you how fragile of a team they are and sometimes how fragile he can be. You know, you're allowed to have one bad game. And let's face it, you know, Pittsburgh's just better. It was a road game for Cleveland, and you know they're probably not ready to be a contending team. They certainly could be a playoff team, but I do find it interesting that after one bad game, how quickly they fell apart. Hey, look at what happened to the Cowboys. Now, the Cowboys have had a bunch of bad games, and they have a losing record, but they're still in first place, and look what happened to them after they lost the other day. The whole team is falling apart.
Yeah, and I actually think the Cowboys lose this weekend. We can get into that maybe another time. another quarterback change in Miami, and this one was really interesting. So the Dolphins go to Tua Tagovailoa, and you know when most young quarterbacks start to play, the guy that gets benched, the older quarterback, Ryan Fitzpatrick in this case, just says like, okay, cool, it's his turn. But Ryan Fitzpatrick seemed genuinely hurt yesterday that he was replaced of a 3-3 team that actually has a chance to make the playoffs, maybe even win the division right now. What'd you make of Ryan Tannehill being so honest with his feelings about being sat down for Tua?
You know, the last big game that Ryan Fitzpatrick played in, the Jets had a game final weekend of the season where they were up in Buffalo, and if they won the game, they would have been a playoff team. And I think he had maybe 3 or 4 interceptions, and the Jets ended up losing the game. It was a really poor performance by him. And he's been a journeyman, but he's, you know, well-liked by coaches and his teammates. You know, so I think we kind of view him as a journeyman, and he was going to be a caretaker to the job. But, you know, he did have a winning record. And, you know, things are starting to look up for the Dolphins, and I'm sure he's probably thinking, why are we making the change now? And the way that it came down, it, you know, was this the plan all along to make the change during the bye week? Because that would give the two extra weeks to prepare. And if that was the plan, why wasn't it kind of relayed? I mean, the way Ryan Fitzpatrick and Tua talk about it makes it sound like they weren't notified. So I think the reaction from Ryan Fitzpatrick, in a lot of ways, it's I know a lot of people almost want him to be gracious that, okay, this is good for the team and good for Tua, so now I'm just going to bow out. I thought it was kind of a normal, natural reaction for somebody to be disappointed that they're losing their job. And he's probably thinking, well, hang on a second. You judge us quarterbacks on quarterback rating and our performance and wins and losses. I've been performing really well the last few weeks, and we're winning. Now you're going to take me out? I mean, you know, the Miami Dolphins are never any good. We're finally trending in the right direction. What is the big rush to put Tua in? Remember, Mahomes did not start his first year. You know, Aaron Rodgers, it took him a couple of years. That's why I just wonder if it's something coming from up above as opposed to it being Brian Flores. Because Brian Flores comes from the Bill Belichick school. Like, if this was going to be your plan, why wouldn't you have let those guys know about it? That part seems a little odd.
Well, there's real quickly, if you look at his contract, at least what's online, there's $5 million of escalators that he's not going to hit now because of playtime. It's like 55%, 65%, 75%, 50 plus playoffs. So, I mean, this could be just a money issue where they're saying, hey, look, man, like, we're not going to pay this guy up to $5 million for, I mean, he's not our future. And that might be why he's so upset as well.
You know, and that could be it. And we also know this, too. You know, in the NFL, with guys, their careers are so short. There are other guys on that team. Do you think every guy on the team is thrilled that they're changing quarterbacks? They might be thinking, hang on a second. We have a chance to be a playoff team, and now you're going to take the quarterback out? Like, you know, I can make a lot of money if we become a playoff team. That's extra money for me. So it's just a confusing one because it's so hard to win in the NFL, and they're finally winning. I'm not saying they're winning big. They're not undefeated. I get that. But clearly the AFC East is wide open right now with New England where they are, you know, Buffalo having dropped two straight games. It's just it's just a very odd time to make a move like that.
Frank Isola joining us here on Fox Sports Radio. Jonas Knox, Jeff Schwartz in for Clay Travis here on Outkick the Coverage. I want to ask you about the Giants because the Jets feel like they're just waiting for doom. Gase is gone, moving on from Sam Darnold. The Giants are in a different position. Obviously, Saquon Barkley out for the year. The Joe Judge experience, he tried to go old school. Then he was playing in the mud at training camp, and Daniel Jones keeps turning the ball over. Is there hope that the Giants are on the right path there, or is there still some question about their quarterback and their coach so far?
I think there's a lot more questions about the quarterback. He just turns the ball over way too much. Now, listen, too, the Giants have basically spent the last 10 years trying to rebuild their offensive line, and when you watch the team play, the minute Daniel Jones has the ball, it always seems like he's running for his life. So I think a lot of this, but this season is going to come down on Dave Gettleman, the general manager. And I would think if they finish with three, four wins, there could be a change there too. And I think the jury's still out on Daniel Jones. And if the Giants have an opportunity to be in a position to draft somebody like Trevor Lawrence, I think that will certainly be in play. You know, the Giants are one of these teams. It's like it's a lot like the Yankees. It's an old school New York team where they have a much older fan base. They're looked at as more of like the mature team in New York, you know, the Giants as opposed to the Jets, the Yankees as opposed to the Mets. And the Giants kind of get a pass a lot of times from the media, and the fact that they've won those Super Bowls has a lot to do with it. But they've been a mess for like 5 or 6 years now. They've had some embarrassing records, some embarrassing performances, and it's not like it's getting better anytime soon. It would look a lot worse if the division they were in had one competent team. So here's the weird part. You know, if they won three games in a row, which I don't know if they could do that, I mean, they'd be right back in the thick of it because there's a good chance a team that wins the NFC East could have just six wins, believe it or not. So maybe it could be a lot worse, but the division stinks.
Well, I was part of that offensive line that they tried to rebuild, and unfortunately, I was hurt my time in New York. Yeah. I'm interested. You mentioned kind of the mentality of the ownership, I like the ownership, but it feels like in the NFL we're moving to a place where you kind of have to be a little bit more flexible with roster building, incorporate analytics. And it doesn't have to mean you build your whole roster around it, but we're seeing that, you know, going for it on fourth down and 2-point conversions and these type of things, you know, building your team around players that fits your scheme. Do you think that the Giants' view of football, just in general, is a little outdated for the way you win in 2020?
I think there can be a lot of truth to that. I certainly, you know, to me, when you look at like the high end right now in the NFL, especially whether it's Aaron Rodgers, even though he didn't play that well last week, but Russell Wilson and, of course, Mahomes. Like watching Mahomes the other night, like on if it's third down and whatever, third and five, third and 14, just the way that he plays, he somehow runs for first down or he passes. And on fourth down, like fourth and two for them, I always think they're going to convert. Like the Chiefs have reached the point now where I'm like going to be shocked when they lose because stopping him on three downs is so difficult. And to your point, on fourth down, they just treat it like it's any down. They're like, yeah, we'll get it. And the Giants are I think you're right. The Giants are kind of stuck. Sometimes you're watching them now, it looks like, you guys aren't going to remember this, like Craig Morton from like back in the 70s when the Giants were, you know, constantly finishing with like three or four wins.
It is amazing. I've thought about that. How fortunate are Chief fans that they're like fourth and two, and it's never a concern. Yeah, don't worry about it. We got it. Meanwhile, Bear fans have been waiting for a quarterback for 35 years. It's ridiculous.
Trade for Fitz.
It is amazing. And the thing, like Mahomes, I can watch him play every time on like a third and long. He's just so patient and so smart. He gets out of the pocket, and you could tell the defense is like, oh, my God, here we go again. Because to his credit, when he first gets out of the pocket, he's still looking to throw the ball. So you have to stay on your wide receiver, and then by the time he does cross the line of scrimmage, it's too late, and he ends up picking up the yards that he needs. He's just at a different level right now playing that position.
Yeah, he is. Frank Isola, you get him on Twitter, at the Frank Isola, kind enough to spend a few minutes with us here on Fox Sports Radio. Frank, we always appreciate it, man. And Clay, I'm sure you guys will do it again next week.
Thanks, guys. Keep up the good work.
There he is, Jonas Knox, Jeff Schwartz, in for Clay Travis here on Fox Sports Radio. All right, coming up next, Clay himself will be checking in with us from D.C. That's right. It was in the news, big news. I'm sure you heard all about it. Clay's going to check in with us from D.C.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Outkick the Coverage here on Fox Sports Radio. Jonas Knox, Jeff Schwartz in for Clay Travis. We will be hearing from Clay coming up here in just a couple of moments. 20 minutes from now, top of next hour, we are going to get into an interesting situation at quarterback for one team in the NFL. That 20 minutes from now here on Fox Sports Radio. But Clay had us guessing where he was the past couple of days. You've seen it by now. The White House let both Clay and Jason Whitlock inside yesterday to sit down with the president, and Clay actually called Dub at our Nashville studios earlier this morning to share with all of us what it was like.
Yeah, guys, I mean, I know we've been playing a little bit of where in the world is Clay Travis, and I couldn't tell you guys where I was going to be, but we had to spend yesterday, which was pretty unbelievable, in the White House. So not just in the White House, in the West Wing of the White House. Jason Whitlock had a sit-down interview with the President of the United States. We got to meet a ton of the staff. We went to go to the Oval Office, meet the President there, meet everybody who was working in the West Wing on a day-to-day basis. And for somebody like me who is a history buff, and look, I went to college in Washington, D.C., at George Washington, and I have gone past the White House several different times. I've been through on a public tour before, but I've never really been into the West Wing, and I've certainly never been into the Oval Office. And so it was just an incredible experience. And I've always said, look, you know, I worked with the White House here to try to get the Big Ten back, and the Big Ten is going to be back on Saturday, actually Friday. Tomorrow, the Big Ten will be back. And to me, it's just, it's an amazing experience as an American, whether you are Republican, Democrat, Independent, to get to go into the White House and just kind of breathe in that aura of history and think about all the different people who have been in those rooms and have been in that building over time and what they have represented for the country. And I understand some people were in an intensely political era, and people are like, oh, I hate Republicans, or oh, I hate Democrats, I hate Trump, I love Trump, I hate Biden, I love Biden. And I've never really been particularly partisan in nature. And I mean, it was such an incredible experience. It's one of those moments where you kind of pinch yourself and you think, I can't believe we're getting to do this. And there are so many different great young people who work in the White House, and, you know, for Republicans or Democrats, it doesn't really matter, are putting their heart and soul into representing the country in so many different great ways. And it was fantastic to get to meet all of those people. And we have a lot of people there who listen to the radio show in the morning. And so I think they were excited, a lot of them, to meet Jason Whitlock and myself. And I got to stand there on the portico, the porch right outside of the Oval Office, and watch Jason Whitlock interview the President of the United States for nearly 20 minutes. Got to meet the President, have a little talk with him. He said that he enjoyed coming on our radio show. He thanked us for having him on twice, and said he really enjoyed being able to come on and talk about sports. And it was a thoroughly amazing day. I brought my wife and my oldest son up, and so they got to meet the President, which is a pretty good little fringe benefit there for them as well, and spend the day in the West Wing. I mean, it was just a really, really cool day, and so I'll be back in the studio tomorrow, normal show on Friday, but I appreciate Jonas and Jeff sitting in now, and right now I'm talking as well with Dub. Is there anything that comes to your mind, Dub? I'll use you as the sounding board. Any questions that you would have about the experience or what it's like to actually go into the White House?
Yeah, one of the first things I was thinking is, you know, what's the security process in terms of entering the White House? Because that's something I've always been curious about. Obviously, it's a very secure location with the president and a number of other, you know, important people involved.
Dignitaries, yeah.
So what was that? What was that process like?
Yeah, so there's what I would call the double gate, right? So you have to go through one gate, and then you go through a second gate in order to have access to the grounds. And so it's fairly detailed, right? You have to provide all the information about yourself. It's not like you can just walk up and walk in. There's a White House guest form that you have to fill out that allows them to do background check on you and verify that you are, in fact, who you say you are, make sure that you're not and have not been historically any sort of danger. And then you have to go through two big gate checks, and then there's obviously a lot of security all over the grounds of the White House. And so I felt completely safe once I got inside, but certainly you knew that it was not a normal building that you're entering. And it's kind of fascinating because I'm 41 now, but 20 years ago I was in college in Washington, D.C., and I worked on Capitol Hill, and I worked for a Democratic congressman at the time, to the point of me being not really a hardcore partisan in any particular direction. And as an intern, I was able to give tours of the Capitol. And at the time, pre 9/11, because 9/11 was right after I graduated from college here in D.C., 9/11 happened in 2001, and I graduated in May of 2001. Spent the summer up here in D.C. until August when I went to start law school. And prior to 9/11, the security apparatus in Washington, D.C. was not actually that substantial. I mean, you could easily go, for instance, when I was an intern, I could walk people onto the Senate floor. I could walk people onto the House floor. I mentioned earlier that I was kind of a nerd in terms of being, and I still am, very much of a history buff. And so I loved and was thrilled at the opportunity to be able to walk people around in the United States Capitol. Now, they've clamped down on that in a big way, and many other buildings as well. And that, you know, is always kind of disappointing, I think, to have to do that. I understand why they do it, but obviously the security apparatus, I think it's fair to say, is very, very, very tense and very, very substantial.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Now, another question I was thinking, because I saw the picture you posted of Jason Whitlock talking to the president. What were his vibes going into that? Like, I could only imagine how nervous I would be if I ever got the chance to interview someone like the president of the United States. What was his mindset going in?
Yeah, it's funny, and we'll talk to Whitlock about this on Tuesday because I think he'll be excited to talk about it. And that interview again went up on Thursday night, so you can go to outkick.com and watch. It's a video interview of Whitlock and the president. I'm right off to the side watching it. Some people say, "Well, what's that like?" First of all, it's awesome as an owner of Outkick to have one of your business partners doing a video interview. You know, you have to pinch yourself a little bit that that's happening, of the president literally, you know, directly outside of the Oval Office and then going in the Oval Office to meet him as well. I mean, I think it's just an impressive sign about the growth of Outkick in general. But he was super nervous. Like I said, I was super nervous. I mean, you can do our job, and I talk to a lot of people from all different backgrounds in the world of sports and beyond on this show, but I think I confessed on the radio show that it felt a little bit to me when we had the president on the first time, that it felt a little bit like what it feels like for a kid the night before Christmas. If you remember that, or if you've got kids, it's hard to get them to bed. You know, you're excited because it's going to be a special day the next day, and I had trouble sleeping, and I think Whitlock would say he had trouble sleeping because you want it to go well and you know the significance of the undertaking. And at the same time, you also are cognizant of the fact that the way to make it go well is not by trying to be something that you're not, right? The reason that a guest like that wants to talk to you is because you've been good about talking to a lot of other guests and you don't want to suddenly become something that you're not. So it is a variety of different angles to hit there, but it was, I thought that's maybe the essence of it. The reason he wants to talk to you is because of who you are, not because of you trying to be something that you're not. And so it's just nerve-wracking. Now, to be fair, the second time we had the president on the show last month, I wasn't nervous at all about it because I was like, okay, we've had him on before, and I think we'll do a good job. And I'm not sure that I would ever be nervous if we have the good fortune of having the president on this radio show, if he wants to come on at some point in the years ahead. I'm not sure that I would be anywhere near the same level of nervous because once you've done it once, you kind of have gotten used to it. But there's a lot of preparation that goes into it. You want to not waste your questions. You want to not put yourself in a difficult situation as a part of the interview, and you want it to come off well. And, you know, everybody can make their own judgment anytime you do a high-profile interview like this, and people can go check it out at outkick.com. But I think as a general rule, we did a pretty fantastic job. I'll toss it back to Jonas and Jeff now. I just wanted to update you again on where in the world was Clay Travis. These guys will have the show. They'll kill it for you live the rest of the way. I will be back in the third hour of the program, give you a little bit more of a flavor for what that experience was like being in the Oval Office, meeting the president, getting to spend the day in D.C. at the White House yesterday. I will talk about that in a little bit. Also, I'll be back on Friday, totally normal show, back in the studio. But this was a special day, obviously, for me and my family to get to meet the president, go to the Oval Office, and conduct an interview with OutKick. But back to Jeff and back to Jonas, rolling through everything, breaking down Game 2 of the World Series and more. What you guys got?
Good stuff. Thanks, Clay. We appreciate it, man. And we welcome you back, everybody, the Geico OutKick Studios. Jeff Schwartz, Jonas Knox here on Fox Sports Radio. Jeff Schwartz, I believe... apparently, you've had a purchase at the home, correct?
My wife just steamrolled me like usual.
Okay.
I'm a new dad, and of four chickens that are showing up. I think I have to pick them up Saturday, and the chicken coop, the hen house is showing up today. That I have to put the problem is this. Okay, it's not that we have the chickens. Like we'll survive. But I just built a brand new backyard and spent a lot of money doing it this whole year. We have a pool and new landscape and everything. Is that I'm the one that's going to have to end up cleaning the hen house.
Oh yeah,
I'm the one that's going to have to end up, you know, cleaning the birds. I'm the one that's going to have to end up making sure the birds aren't eaten by a hawk. Or and my neighbor 2 weeks ago was like, we have a 6-foot snake like in between our property. Like, I have to make sure that like I'm the one who's going to have to do all this, not her. And so it's just at least you didn't get the turkeys. She pranked me yesterday and said she bought 10 turkeys. So. Yeah, I'm a bird dad now, I guess. And I don't even eat eggs. I don't understand. We don't eat eggs. So
that's going to be a pain in the ass. What was the point?
I don't know the point. That's the problem. I don't know the point.
That sounded like a quarantine purchase, like back in March. People were buying all sorts of stuff that maybe they didn't even want. But that's, I mean, hey, but you know what, though? You're the man for the job. All right, so get used to stepping in chicken crap when you go outside.
I'm from Los Angeles.
Yeah,
I am not a country guy.
That's terrible. By the way, there's a terrible situation in the NFL for one quarterback. We'll get to that next year on Outkick the Coverage.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Well, it's time for a little bit of honesty for one fan base in the world of sports. We will get into that here coming up in just a couple of moments. He is Jeff Schwartz. I am Jonas Knox in for Clay Travis here on Fox Sports Radio. You could always hang out with us on the iHeartRadio app and on all of our Fox Sports Radio affiliates wherever you are taking part in this program. Good Thursday morning to you. Jeff Schwartz, what the hell's happening on a Thursday, October morning in the Schwartz household where now you've got chickens all of a sudden?
Yeah, they'll be here. Well, I guess I have to go pick them up on Saturday. I have to drive to the middle of nowhere. I live in Charlotte. I don't even know where I'm going. I'm going to some city I never heard of. I'm picking up. So I'm getting, we're not even getting like normal looking chickens. We're getting silkies, and they're like big fluffy chickens that like look like they're bougie chickens, which makes sense for my family. So, I'm a new chicken dad. I guess I'll have eggs that I don't really eat very often. And, but I can take solace though. I can feel better about myself knowing the Dodgers lost last night. So,
unbelievable. You're going to go there.
That makes me feel better. Like I woke up this morning kind of like, oh man, I checked the score. You know, I like baseball, but I also like sleep. And so I went to bed about the seventh inning and I wake up, I was like, oh man, the Dodgers lost. How unfortunate. And it did cheer me up, though. So
wow.
I feel better now about life that the Rays tied the series up.
I mean, listen, all Jeff and I are trying to do here is try and create a fair and balanced operation here at Fox Sports Radio. Now, just a little behind the scenes, people would like to know a little behind the scenes here at FSR. All right, behind the scenes. Roberto Flores is our technical producer here at Fox Sports Radio. He's also known as Dave Roberts' cabana boy. I mean, yeah, all right. he does is ball wash Dave Roberts.
Negative.
About how great Dave Roberts is and how great the Dodgers are.
Shut up.
And it's nauseating. And so we're just trying to represent the other side of the conversation here, which is, look, if the Dodgers lose a game and they get beat on national television, we've got to have the discussion. It's got to be had. And so, Jeff Schwartz, you're very happy about it. Roberto, we're not trying to stir the pot here. That's the last, you know me, that's the last thing I want to do is try and rile up Dodger fans listening on our flagship AM570 LA Sports.
Says the Cubs fan who was 108-year drought and the Giants fan with 56-year drought.
Come on, man.
Well, the 56-year drought that ended with 3 World Series in 5 years, you left that part out. I just want to make sure that we have that.
Yeah, but it was a 56-year drought before that.
Look, I was 2 years old the last time the Dodgers won a World Series. Okay, so let's stop. I've only been a fan for the time I can actually be
and
alive.
And you'll probably be dead by the next time the Giants win a World Series with Gabe Kapler as their manager.
But at this rate, I'll be dead before the Dodgers win any World Series. So
they'll win this year. No worries.
I mean, look, it's you know, I try and pride myself on being the one media member in LA who doesn't suck up to the Dodgers. That's my whole goal in my career is being the one who doesn't suck up to the Dodgers. But again, it's difficult here when you're working with guys like Roberto, who's Dave Roberts' number one fan.
Nope.
Danny G, who's never said a critical thing about the Dodgers in the history of his fandom.
Yeah, except for on yesterday's show in hour 3.
I'm trying to represent this fairly here. On Fox Sports Radio. I mean, the Rays, even the World Series up. And so now, you know, I got Roberto who's all worried and nervous afterwards. He's yelling all sorts of curse words in Spanish that I understand because my in-laws are Mexican. So I get it. But all of that is happening here during the breaks. And it's a little bit of chaos here at Fox Sports Radio. That's all I want people to know behind the scenes, of chaos here in our locker room.
It's bad, man.
Look, really bad. The Dodgers have been terrible all year against this left-handed pitching. So I knew yesterday's result wasn't going to be too good. So I'm not too worried about that.
Dodger fans are already resigned to losing. Oh, whatever. A lefty's being thrown.
You follow the team. You know they're terrible because left-handed pitching.
Here's the thing. You know, I will say this, though. I am so glad that I don't live and die with a team anymore. I literally thank Christ that I don't live and die with a team anymore.
Well, I
think MLB playoff baseball is so stressful.
It's the most stressful thing.
It's not enjoyable. It's the kind of stress that's not enjoyable, man. And I don't know what it is about baseball. Maybe it's just the time in between pitches.
Well, I think it's – well, for me, it's stressful because the Dodgers haven't won in 32 years. I think if they're able to pull it off this year, I think I'll be able to enjoy the playoffs more the following years to come. I don't know, Jeff. After the Giants won in 2010, were you able to enjoy the play? No.
No. So here's why I think, and I tweeted about this, and a hockey fan was like, hockey's the best playoffs. Like, that's not really what I said. But what I said is that I think baseball is the most stressful playoffs as a fan. And because...
100%. Yeah.
I'll tell you, here's the reason why. Okay, when you're a football fan and you watch football long enough, you know that, like, the first quarter, like, okay, yeah, I'm watching, you know, okay, if something happens in the first quarter, there's plenty of time to make it up, right? Like, every play, it's 3rd and 18. You don't have to, 3rd and 18, it's not a stressful play.
Texans Chiefs last year. Perfect example.
Right. So Chiefs come back as a Chiefs fan, I am. And then, like, they're up by 2 scores. I'm like, okay, game's, like, over, right? In baseball, every single pitch feels important.
Yes.
And there's 30 seconds between each pitch. And, you know, because it could be a 3-0 count and a hitter is swinging away. You know, in basketball, you know, I'm a Lakers fan. You know, in game six, the Lakers were up like 25 in the first half. Yeah. Like, this game's over. Like, I don't have to stress anymore. But the Dodgers can hit, right? So the Rays are up 5-0, a walk, a home run. It's like 5-2. Oh, here we go again. Like, every single pitch in baseball feels so important, where in other sports, there are just kind of more downtime to just mentally not have to stress during a game. That's why I think baseball, and I'm, you know, Giants never play easy games when we were winning World Series. Like, nothing was ever easy.
Yeah,
every game was like 3-2, and you're just like, oh, it's very stressful.
And it's also because there's so many outliers in baseball, and then you have players that are great in the regular season that don't come through in the postseason. When you don't see that, you don't see. Yeah, you don't see that in basketball. You don't see that in football. Usually, the
good point.
Players that are great in basketball, they're going to come through for you in the playoffs or the NBA Finals. And baseball is not like that.
It's just not enjoyable.
Yeah, Marco
man.
Freaking Scudero, freaking hit like
Ross?
Freaking. I don't know who the hell came out of nowhere and won the World Series for the Giants, and a guy Cody Ross.
Cody
like,
Ross
got
who?
Out of nowhere.
David
Eckstein for the freaking Angels.
I
guys
the,
out of
like,
nowhere, man. Like
remember Scott Spezio? Some Allison Chains knockoff, and he's like all of a sudden a hero.
And the Cubs,
and then
the Cubs. Who's the guy from the Cubs? Was the NLCS? MVP the year they won the.
Who cares? That team stinks.
So many outliers in baseball.
If you're okay, so Dodger fans that are listening on AM 570 LA Sports, I'd love to know how many of them have truly been able to enjoy Halloween the past 3-4 years. Honest to God, it's a miserable time. You're stressed out. It determines your mood. And just think about this: your mood is determined by some guys that have no idea who the hell you are. That is how stressful this whole thing is. And that's why I look at this and I go, I don't want to be a Dodger fan. I don't want to be a Ray fan. I want no part of that. And you can call me not having a winning mentality. That's fine. Let me tell you what a winning mentality is. Not walking around with urine-soaked jeans because I just had to watch my team sweat out a 10-inning game in the playoffs.
Have you given up fandom?
Oh, I'm over it. I can't do it.
Oh.
I cannot let them determine, unless it's Hawaii football.
It's easier to enjoy these games on the weekend where you can just continually chug beer after beer after beer. You know, we're about going to work.
Yeah, there's that.
But when you have to go to work, it's a lot more stressful.
And baseball playoffs, Jeff, you're 100% correct. There's something, and it's the time in between pitches. What's the old adage? The only thing worse than getting your ass whooped is waiting for it to happen. Every single pitch, you're waiting for something bad to happen. And in the regular season, a guy walks, whatever. Yeah. You walk somebody in the playoffs,
it's
like the end of the world.
Last night.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Tampa's up 5-0. Snell walks a guy. He struck out like 25 guys already.
It's terrible. Next pitch
is a home run. You're like, game's changed. 5-2 now.
And then you're just thinking about, oh, my God. And then you start doing these like mental pretzels in your mind to where now you're thinking, okay, well, yeah, we won that game, but, man, the Dodgers did get a couple of hits, and they hit a home run off our relievers, so now we can't go back to the relievers. And then, okay, well, is Blake Snell going to be ready? God, but he hasn't gotten past 6 innings all season. And then you just start to second-guess and doubt yourself and the analytics and all the other things that happen. It is just it's too much stress, man. I am not envious at all of Dodger fans this morning or Rays fans. I'm not even at all.
Well, the Rays feel like they're playing with a little dealer's money, right? The Lightning won the cup. Tampa Bay, the Bucks are really, really good. I mean, think Tom Brady, right? I mean, as soon as Tom Brady shows up, the city of Tampa just starts winning things.
That's what it is.
And so, like, Tampa's, I mean, if they lose this, okay, yeah, you got a Stanley Cup. You have the NFC favorite, in my opinion, on football. But you got a lot going for you.
Yeah, I just, man, if you're a Dodger fan, and here's the worst part about it, too. Now you got to think about it for a couple of days. All right, you can't just get right back out there. You can't just walk right back out there and play like they were doing in every other playoff series. Now you take a day off, and then you got to come back on Friday.
It's better this way.
Oh, yeah, but all day Friday, Dodger fans are going to be worried about whether or not, Bueller going to hold up to Charlie Morton, who's had a really good playoff so far? It's all-consuming. It completely rattles you. You can't focus on things. You're nervous all day. Productivity at work's going to be awful. And then you start drinking. You have like 5-6 Modelos. Next thing you know, the phone rings. I'm telling you. You don't realize how much you're drinking. The phone rings, and you answer your shoe instead of your phone. Like, it's all like, this is the life of a fan of a playoff baseball.
I might go through 48 beers this week.
It's bad. And then, imagine a Dodgers fan and thinking about Dave Roberts just looking at analytics the next 2 or 3 days. He's going to be studying that computer cheat, and you can't trust him to put the right reliever in. It's going to be bad.
Yeah, listen, that is why there really is a piece in cheering for a bad team. When you cheer for a bad team, you can just say, eh, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, just roll with that. That's fine.
You're a Bears fan. You know the feeling, right?
He's Jeff Schwartz. I'm Jonas Knox. In for Clay Travis. This is Outkick the Coverage here on Fox Sports Radio. You can always check out this show on the iHeartRadio app. Coming up next, how concerned should one NFL team be about the health of their starting quarterback? We'll have the answer for you next here on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Jonas Knox, Jeff Schwartz here on Fox Sports Radio. You can check out the show, as always, on the iHeartRadio app. Coming up later on this hour, Clay Travis will be checking in with us from D.C., so make sure you stick around. We'll be hearing from Clay here coming up later in the hour here on Fox Sports Radio. Right now, kind enough to spend a few minutes with us here on Fox Sports Radio, Dr. David Chow at Pro Football Doc joining us here on FSR. Dr. Jonas and Jeff Schwartz, thanks for popping on with us.
Oh, thanks for having me, you guys.
Absolutely. So, obviously, week 7 is already here. We were talking about this earlier. We can't believe how fast it's actually gone with all the craziness just in the world of sports and in the NFL. But that being said, the story injury-wise is what has happened to the Philadelphia Eagles this season, completely and totally ravaged by injuries. Can you recall a time or a team that had to deal with this much this early in the season and, in essence, a quarterback – having to almost do it on his own based on what we've seen from Philadelphia so far?
No question. And the irony is this. Many have called Carson Wentz injury prone. And now he's essentially the last man standing, right?
Yep.
Jason
yep.
Kelce, the center, is still playing but has a hip designation. And Carson Wentz has led the team to an average of 34 points the last 2 weeks while enduring 14 sacks. The offensive line is ravaged. The receivers are all done. Now both tight ends, Miles Sanders. But the article that just posted that I wrote on Outkick says, well, I don't know, the Eagles might have a good go of it tonight, is my opinion. I think they're so overestimated on the injuries that it gets baked into the line, and I think DeSean Jackson and Lane Johnson are going to make strong returns today, as well as Avonte Maddox. So three key starters back for the Eagles. They're at least trending in the right direction.
I know Lane had surgery on his ankle. How often do you see players kind of get a surgery and are able to play as quickly as some of the players we've seen in the NFL? I mean, it's pretty shocking to me when you see a player get a surgery and then they're back in either the same week or in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, it really depends on the surgery, right? Is it a simple ankle scope where you cleaned off a bone spur or took out a loose chip? That's a pretty quick recovery. But, you know, there are some rumors of a cyst or something else. So, you know, until you know the actual details, obviously Lane Johnson's pretty tough and he's not finished several games already. And, you know, he hasn't talked about his injury. So I'm sure there's something there that we'll eventually know the truth on.
Dr. David Chow joining us here on Fox Sports Radio. Jonas Knox, Jeff Schwartz in for Clay Travis here on Outkick the Coverage. What can you tell us about Alshon Jeffrey's injury? It feels like forever since we've actually seen him play. And you mentioned all the wide receivers, obviously Jeffrey being one of them. He's ruled out for this game on a short week. But what is going on with Alshon Jeffrey and his status? Because if I'm not mistaken, he hasn't played at all this year yet.
You're correct, and it's curious because not only has he not played, he didn't get put on PUP, which would have been 6 weeks, which, you know, he could have, and the Eagles could have had the roster spot in retrospect. He could have been also put on injured reserve and just missed 3 weeks. So, it's a little bit curious what's going on there. I think he's close, and, you know, this next week here after this 10 days before week 8 probably is his first realistic chance to play.
Looking at the games on Sunday, a team that I think will bounce back this week is the Browns. How tough is it for Baker Mayfield to play that position with a rib injury? I mean, we saw that he got hit pretty hard in the middle of the game by Cam Hayward, eventually was taken out, I think more just as a precaution. But how healthy can someone be 2 weeks after injuring their ribs?
Well, there's no question a rib is pretty painful, but I think he had more than a rib as well. To me, the way he went down, the way he let his shoulder hang, the way that he shook his shoulder indicated an AC joint sprain as well as the rib. Reports were that he had some padding for the ribs, but Jeff, you know, padding doesn't do that much, especially for someone who has to torque in his torso and throw the ball and also take these hits. A rib block would help, but I get why people might be gun-shy about doing that this year. And, you know, believe it or not, he's going to be better this week than last week. Is he going to be 100%? No. But, you know, ribs fortunately get better fairly quickly, of course, until you get hit again.
Dr. David Chow joining us here on Fox Sports Radio at Pro Football Doc on Twitter. Jonas Knox, Jeff Schwartz in for Clay Travis here on FSR. I want to ask you about Tua. The Dolphins have named him the starting quarterback in Miami after their bye week coming up. And, you know, he gets a tough test in Aaron Donald, and that Rams defense in his NFL debut or his first career NFL start. Based on the injury that he suffered, what's your major concern about him moving forward, or do you think he's good to go and there's going to be no cause for concern that there's a possibility that he could have an issue with the hip one more time?
Well, he's right where I thought he would be the moment he got injured, that he would be fine to play. The concern is long-term in terms of arthritis that might develop. In the short term, I don't have any concern. And specifically, I have zero concern that he will re-dislocate the hip. It was a fracture dislocation. The fracture was fixed. Hip dislocations are freak injuries anyways. Yes, high power injuries, but very freakish. And the hip joint, unlike the shoulder. The shoulder can come out again and again, but the shoulder joint is more of a golf ball on a tee in terms of the bony structure. But the hip joint is a true ball and socket joint. So anyone worried about his hip coming out is not, you really don't need to worry about that. And his timing for not starting week one wasn't his hip. It's just in a pandemic, no off-season program, limited preseason, how do you get any college quarterback really enough reps to get comfortable to start? And now obviously the Dolphins feel he is.
Looking at the Raiders, not really injury related, but COVID related, and I saw you tweet about this yesterday. So Trent Brown, the right tackle, was on the reserve COVID-19 list, and that means that the entire offensive line has to, I believe, quarantine because of contact tracing. Do you expect their offensive line to be able to play this weekend? I mean, so it's kind of important that you'd want your offensive line to play in a football game.
No question. And this is what I've been saying for a long time is the worst fear, clusters like this.
Yeah.
You know, and you have to be careful about not meeting together, right? And, you know, the offensive line room needs to meet in the team meeting room or something, right?
And most are, by the way. I think most are doing that, but it's just we have practice and stuff, obviously.
Well, yeah, so you have to practice, and there's been contact tracing with practice, and I'm not trying to be controversial, but, you know, between practice and practice is more dangerous than games. There was an SI article just the other day saying that all the medical experts in college football that Ross Dellinger interviewed were not concerned about in-game transmission, and that's
Agreed.
A side note. But this is a big deal, and we've talked about it at Outkick and here, Viral Load, 3 months ago, and I tweeted that article. But here the big concern is, with the new NFL rules, if you are identified as a high-risk contact, and I don't know for sure if the other five starters that were sent home have truly been identified as high-risk, or they were just sent home out of an abundance of caution, the new favorite phrase for everybody. If they're truly high risk, it now requires a mandatory 5-day quarantine from the last time you had contact. And so 5 days, I mean, Wednesday this happened, 5 days is Sunday. Now, was their last contact on Tuesday or Monday? Maybe, right? So maybe there's time. But there is a question to that, and that's part of the article that just posted minutes ago this morning on Outkick. The new home field advantage is no longer fans and stands or noise, et cetera, because of no fans and limited fans. But now it's because of COVID testing. Look, last week, Melvin Gordon couldn't travel to New England to play because he didn't have 48 hours after his strep throat because he needed to test positive twice. And you can't get on a plane until and join the team until you test negative twice, right? And so a home team gets an extra day. And for something that's 5 days from Wednesday, if the Raiders were on the road, I don't think the starters would be able to travel if they were high risk. Because they're at home, they may indeed have time to clear the 5-day quarantine. So that's our new home field advantage in the crazy 2020.
He's Dr. David Chow at Pro Football Doc on Twitter is where you can find him. Joining us here on Fox Sports Radio, Jonas Knox, Jeff Schwartz, in for Clay Travis here on Outkick the Coverage. I wanted to ask you about Jamal Adams because he suffered the groin injury in that game against the Dallas Cowboys, and he still hasn't practiced. How concerned are you or surprised that this has lingered on this long and Jamal Adams is yet to be able to get out there for the Seahawks?
Not surprised from this perspective. First of all, he covers sideline to sideline, and so you definitely need your groin to be able to do that. And remember, he got hurt the very same game as Chris Carson, who got that gator roll injury, right? And at the time, everyone was freaking out about the gator roll injury on Carson. I said, Carson's going to play next week. It's Jamal Adams that you have to worry about. And unfortunately, that's come true for the safety. He'll be back this year. It's just a matter of when he can get back to himself and going sideline to sideline.
I'm not sure this matters for their overall team, but Sam Darnold might come back this weekend against the Bills. Hasn't played since week four because of that shoulder injury. Also, Mekhi Becton might be back, which, look, having your left tackle and quarterback back, even on a bad team, might make them a little bit better. Do you think both those players are ended up playing for the Jets this weekend?
Yeah, I'm more surprised that Sam Darnold hasn't played already. Obviously, okay. That Thursday night game a couple weeks ago, he finished it, and then the Jets sat him the next 2 weeks saying that he didn't have practice time. He's limited practice this week so far. I think he will finally play. But here's the thing, Jeff. I mean, you can answer this question for the audience better than I can. I've been writing and saying, you know, how do the other guys in the locker room feel? You know, there's Mekhi Becton, there's some communication issues, but how do the other guys in the locker room feel when the team is paying two of the star players not to play? They were paying Sam Darnold to sit and paying Le'Veon Bell to play for the Chiefs. I mean, yeah. What message does that send to the rest of the locker room? Hey, I'm dinged up. I got a little something. Do I need to take care of me or what's going on here, right? I mean, you could comment on that.
And what's interesting about that, too, is that they rushed Mekhi Becton back on that Thursday night game for no reason whatsoever. I mean, he was emergency. Like, if you dress someone, they're not emergency anymore. They're dressed to play the game, and it set Mekhi Becton back a couple of weeks. It just let him sit. I mean, he's your best player right now. So, like, they're sending mixed signals, right? They're letting Sam Darnold stay out, but then pushing to play the rookie left tackle, and they're letting Bell go, and they're trading a bunch of places. It's a mess. That's why everyone's trying to leave. It's because it's a mess there right now.
Well, and there are people leaving, right, with trades now, including
like random players,
captains.
Practice squad players.
But here's the other thing. The wrote an article a couple weeks ago about the five medical issues within the last year that have dogged the Jets. And I'm not criticizing their medical staff. It's more the communication and how they've handled it from above, not the medical staff itself. We mentioned Sam Darnold. To me, that's curious that you put him back in but then have him out. You mentioned Mekhi Becton's situation. The first week of the season, Le'Veon Bell returned after a hamstring injury, which I didn't think he was going to. And then Adam Gase admitted, yeah, he shouldn't have done that. So there's some miscommunication there. And going back to last season, Quincy Enunwa being outraged that he was fined twice when he was already on injured reserve for missing a therapy session. And he was outraged and took to it publicly. There was poor communication there. And we all remember Kelechi Osemele. They're trying to fine him for not practicing, not playing, when his second opinion doctor was suggesting surgery. So, I mean, that's five outstanding medical issues for one team in less than 365 days.
Get him on Twitter. He's a phenomenal follow at Pro Football Doc, Dr. David Chow. Thanks for popping on with us. We appreciate it. A busy week in the NFL coming up.
Thanks. And Jeff, are you going to tell us about your brother's back? Are you going to help me out a little bit?
I will not. But nice try. That was a good effort.
Jonas Knox, Jeff Schwartz, in for Clay Travis here on Fox Sports Radio. Coming up next, Clay will be checking in with us from D.C.